Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehl 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Alan McInerney, meine Damen und Herren.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the German Football Podcast. And what an episode we have for you today. We're going to be going through quickly the results of the Pokal, but more importantly, we're going to be attempting to preview the Bundesliga. So attempting's the operative word there. We're going to go through as much as we can in one episode. Other more organized German football podcasts have chosen to do this in two episodes, which we probably should have done. But that's just organization is not what we do here. Evidenced by the fact it's taken us 50 minutes to start recording, which is probably a record. But yeah, some of you might be slightly confused that I'm now the host, Colin the host last week. The irony probably won't be lost on you that me as an Englishman now hosting the podcast, which was originally intended to as some Scottish boys talking about German football, but here I am, I've taken over. But it's just for 1 week, as we said last week, we're just sharing the hosting duties around now. So as in 1707, we've all unified, we're all friends now, and it's my turn hosting the big one this week. So to our ex boss, the original host, Roy, how are you doing today? You've got a Werder Bremen top on. Are you celebrating the departure of Josh Sargent from Zweite Bundesliga, or is there another reason?
It was the first top at the top of my list of football tops. Basically, I just rotate every time, so there's really no good reason. I wish I had a good reason, because that reason was shit. But yeah, maybe it's just you telling us last week that Josh Sargent definitely won't leave, and then he got that big move to the Premier League. Maybe I'm just trying to rub it in your face.
Yeah,
I'm doing well on that.
I mean, I'm not sure it came as much of a surprise to anyone that my prediction that Josh Sargent wouldn't score 2 weeks ago, then scored a brace, and then last week that he would stay at Bremen, now is in just up the road from me in Norwich now, actually. Anyway, Colin, how are you doing, mate?
I'm all right. Interesting, another host. Let's see how you do this week. Last week, the pressure was all on me, so it's good to have the pressure on someone else.
Yeah, indeed. And I would like to say, like, I'm not the host because Colin did a terrible job last week. We're trying to take the work off Roy's shoulders a little bit. So yeah, the other slight piece of admin is that this episode is going to have quite a lot of information to get through. So we're going to say that if we don't get to anything, or there's any teams we don't cover, then just tweet us or reply to one of our tweets this week, and we'll try and get through them at the start of next week's episode, because there's a lot to get through this week. So we're firstly going to start with the DFB Pokal, which happened over this weekend. The first sort of thing to get to about that is with Wolfsburg, who in extra time in their game against Preußen Münster brought on a substitute, which turned out to be their sixth substitute of the game. And despite winning 3-1, have had a complaint filed by Preußen Münster because according to paragraph 31, point A of the DFB rulebook, that is not allowed. 5 is the maximum. So at the moment, it's currently in the DFB Sportgericht, awaiting an outcome on that. Wolfsburg's argument is that they were never told by the officials, and therefore it's the officials' fault. And Preußen Münster's argument is that it was Wolfsburg's fault because they should have read the rule book, because no other team in the DFB Pokal this week made that mistake. So we'll see how that turns out. But that's the boring part of the Pokal done, and the complicated sort of Kafkaesque aspects of the Pokal done. And we're going to get onto the Bundesliga teams who were knocked out a bit later when we come to those teams. But I'll just quickly mention that Eintracht Frankfurt went down 2-0 to Waldhof Mannheim. A not great start for Oliver Glasner. And Babelsberg 0-3 beat the promoted Greuther Fürth on pens. But like I said, we'll talk a bit more about the implications for that when we go into the Bundesliga preview a bit later. But for now, Colin, I'll come to you first. What are the main takeaways from this weekend in the Pokal?
I thought it was really entertaining weekend. It's always one of the highlights of the German football calendar. It's where you see the first look of a lot of the Bundesliga, well, all the Bundesliga teams for the season. And there's always that leveler that the lower league sides get the home advantage, but also that they're maybe 2 or 3 weeks into their season as well, acts as a leveler and really makes so many of the games competitive. And we really did see that over the weekend. There weren't too many shocks in terms of the home sides coming out victorious, but quite a few of them took the sides right to extra end extra time or penalties. You saw with Elversberg against Mainz. You saw with Vika Flensburg against Holstein Kiel. Really competitive games. And we did end up seeing a couple of shocks, as you mentioned, like Mannheim and Babelsberg both coming out on top. But another thing I noticed, that there wasn't too many hammerings either. Most of the games were competitive. There's previous seasons we've seen absolute hammerings, maybe a Bundesliga side going to the fifth tier and really getting a comfortable win. But I thought the way the draw worked out was quite good, that none of them really happened, apart from the likes of Stuttgart, FC Dynamo, and Fortuna Düsseldorf at Oldenburg. But a lot of highlights. I mean, I'd say the main standouts were the likes of the games you mentioned, but also ones such as, I mean, kicking off the flyer, that 18-16 against Darmstadt, great penalty shootout, and checking up the scores, seeing Bayreuth versus Arminia Bielefeld, all the goals coming through, and the extra time between Flensburg and Kiel. I mean, I know Roy sort of pointed out that as one of the games of the weekend, but it did. Although Flensburg didn't end up coming out victorious, which he incorrectly predicted, that extra time period must have been crazy to watch. I don't know if you watched it, Roy, did you?
I did. I managed to get some of it. I think it's still worth the shout that I said to watch this game. And you both laughed at me last week going, Flensburg. You should have seen that extra time. That extra time was outstanding. I don't think they ever popped up once on the actual conference. I don't think they ever showed up once in the conference. They only showed up at the end when Verlängerung and like extra time came along. But it was interesting to see the German Aston Villa.
So it was the bold Patrick Herrmann that scored their two goals as well. He used to play for himself and Darmstadt. So it was the superior Patrick Herrmann, I think. Was that the superior
one? Yeah, exactly.
Patrick Herrmann.
It was a weird one. It was just one of those the games, as soon as we went into extra time, it's that penalty sparked it. And yeah, it was a good one to watch, definitely, from what I got to see.
Yeah. What I liked personally, as I was saying to you both earlier before we started recording, is that you had so many of the Dritte Liga teams sort of showing their worth, pretty much with the exception of Wiesbaden, off the top of my head, all only going down by a goal to nil. Or by one goal margin. I mean, Kaiserslautern pushed Gladbach quite closely as well. I thought Victoria Köln were pretty unlucky to beat as fairly poor Hoffenheim team. They took them into extra time. It was good to see the Dritte Liga teams showing that the quality they do have, which sometimes gets doubted on the pod, but We'll move away from the Pokal, and maybe if anyone wants to ask us anything about that, we'll go on to it next week. But we've got a lot to talk about with the Bundesliga kicking off on Friday night with Borussia Mönchengladbach playing Bayern. So the way this is going to work is that we're going to roughly talk about the first six or seven. Then we're going to go to the bottom and talk about the sort of bottom six or seven and who we think might go down. And then we'll just wrap up, any other business, maybe give a few other teams a shout out. And then on Thursday or Friday, we're all going to post our full predictions onto the Twitter page. So no time to waste. We're going to kick off, unfortunately, with the reigning champions, Bayern Munich. As we were saying at the end of last season, it is very much a new era for Bayern, bringing in Julian Nagelsmann, handing him a 5-year deal, which is the longest they've given a manager since Ottmar Hitzfeld left in 2004, was the longest he's actually stayed for 5 years. They've also brought in Oli Kahn as a permanent CEO to go along with current sporting director Hasan Salihamidžić. So with Flick gone and Nagelsmann joining Kahn and Salihamidžić at the helm of Bayern, you really wonder if it's a new era for the Bavarians. So Colin, I'll come to you. How do you think they'll go into this new era, especially when you consider the fact that they've lost long-term players such as, you know, Alaba, Boateng, Martinez? Do you think they'll be able to adjust quickly, or do you think that there might be a bit of a layover time before they get going again?
Yeah, we're going into the season with so much uncertainty because there has been so much change up in the boardroom, firstly, but then the coach changing with Nagelsmann coming in. I think the thought is that as a Bavarian and with his Bundesliga experience anyway, it should be quite an easy transition for him. But there is that lack of major trophy success, which is really the only cloud hanging over that appointment, I would say, given him such a long deal as well. Maybe the most concern is that the squad changes, because they have lost a lot of experience, like Jerome Boateng, Javier Martinez, but particularly David Alaba. He's been such a key player over the last 8 or 9 years that it's going to be really hard to replace him. They have brought in Upamecano, who in the long term will be he really is a world-class defender, but you saw signs of some poor form towards the end of last season. I'm not sure if that was an effect of the Bayern move pending or just general bad form, but I'd say that signing will come good, but it's just how quickly it's all going to come together for Nagelsmann. I think that's the main question. But with Bayern being so far ahead, last few seasons ahead of the other teams, it's as much a case of which of those teams can actually make a challenge, as opposed to, because Bayern could have an off-season. Bayern have had off-seasons in the past, but they still won the title. And it's just really whether it will be enough for another team to catch them up if there is that negative form throughout the season.
Yeah, definitely. And we've committed to not making this a Bayern-centric podcast. But Roy, I mean, you look at the back four is probably where teams are going to target them the most. I mean, it's still, despite Upamecano coming in, it's still a very inexperienced back four. I mean, if they go for a back four, that is. I mean, on the weekend with Omar Richards injured and Davies not playing, it's probably going to be Stanisic at left back, who's only made one Bundesliga appearance, I think. And even at right back, if Pavard gets injured at any point, they've only really got Buna Sarr to play there, who hasn't really sort of set the world on fire since he's been at the Allianz Arena. So do you reckon teams are really going to go for it this year? We're trying to target a back four like that?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny how you say that the hope Pavard doesn't get injured, because they announced a couple hours ago that he is injured.
There you go.
Explosive on the GFB. he's out for a month, apparently. So that just adds to the blows that you mentioned there. Yeah, they're a bit light at the back, shall we say, and I wonder if they'll have to go more youthful going forward. But Buna Sarr's not really set the world alight when he's played, has he? So Havard being out already for this game, they're probably going to have to call on him. It might be interesting to see how they... It'll still be interesting to see how they actually line up under Nagelsmann properly, because they didn't get their first competitive game against Bremer SV at the weekend either. So we still don't really know what way they're going to set themselves up. Defensively, though, it could be really, really difficult. But when you're Bayern Munich and you have that attacking force and that goalkeeper, sometimes that having a shaky defence isn't really the worst thing in the world. But I don't know. I kind of agree with everything Colin said there. It'll probably be one of those seasons where, you know, they have to eventually rejuvenate things and get things going. It might take some time. They might have a shaky season. Even if they do, I think they still should win the league fairly comfortably, but not as comfortably as they have in the past few years.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing on Bayern is that with that rescheduled game against Bremer SV that you mentioned, they've now got 5 games in about 15 days after they start their game against Gladbach. So feeding the Super Cup as well against Dortmund on the 17th. So we'll see how they manage to deal with that. So for me, I think that, I mean, the team that finished second last year, RB Leipzig, they've also the first sort of domino to fall with Nagelsmann going to Leipzig, which set in motion the entire managerial carousel. But how do you think that Jesse Marsch coming in for his first season in the Bundesliga, Roy, is going to sort of be able to deal with that? I mean, he's got probably quite a lot of expectation with him. He's come from a very within the Red Bull school from Salzburg. How do you reckon he's going to get on?
I think a lot of people are setting him up to fail. I think a lot of people are parading him as this, he's coming from a nothing background. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people who are just assuming that he's not going to be as successful as the past few managers have been. But he's proven that he's won doubles in the past couple of seasons in Austrian Bundesliga, which isn't... It's not the most won-a-horse race league in the world. I mean, slightly, yes, but there's still good teams that can challenge Red Bull Salzburg. And I think that he's coming with a better pedigree than a lot of people are making out to be. The signing of André Silva is what they needed last year. If they had André Silva last year, would they have challenged more for the league? Potentially, yeah. I think that more attacking mindset for them. They've also got Brian Brog... How do you say that? Is it Brobby or Broby? Or is it like Bobby with an R?
Yeah, Brobby.
We've also brought in Brian Brobby from Ajax as well. I don't think he's a prolific goal scorer, but there's still another attacking option. So he's clearly, if these signings were made by him before he came in, because I know Brobby was made before the summer, or it was terms were agreed anyway. He's clearly seen what the issue was last year and he's clearly rectified it already with bringing in what André Silva is, one of the best goal scorers in the league last season. So it'll be an interesting one for Leipzig this season. I think they'll be another one who will be in a kind of transformation season as well with the new manager, but don't write them off completely. I think they'll maybe fall a place or two though in my predictions. There's a wee sneak peek.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting you mentioned André Silva, because for me, since RB Leipzig have been in the Bundesliga, I'd probably say that you've not always seen them act as if they are sort of desperate to win the Bundesliga. They're quite content with having a good Bundesliga side and trying to make the most of what they've got. But with the marquee signing of André Silva, it's a big sign of intent to go with the attacking players they've already got, like you said, Brobby and Hwang and Schoberslei. He scored on the weekend, his first competitive game, as well as the old boys like Forsberg and Poulsen. You saw they both had good Euros campaigns as well. I mean, the main question mark for me would actually similarly be at the back with the obvious loss of Konate and Upamecano. The way that they play, they haven't really brought in a centre-back to replace him. I think they're still going after Lacroix, but they've signed Simakan from Strasbourg. He's had one season in Ligue 1. So it'd be interesting to see if he can play well with Willy Orban, who I've said before I think is their best centre half anyway. But we'll move on because we're done with we've got the bad stuff out of the way with the Bayern and Leipzig chat. So what's really interesting is the case of Borussia Dortmund, who finished third last year and have similarly brought in a new manager, as almost every Bundesliga team has. They've got in Marco Rose this season from Gladbach. The obvious sort of headline is the departure of Jadon Sancho, but they have recruited quite well. The big signing being Donny Marlon from PSV for 30 million euros and Kobel from Stuttgart for 15 million euros and a couple of young lads, Kamara and Koulibaly from PSG. So, Colin, how do you think that those recruitments have sort of rectified for the loss of Sancho? And do you think, in a way, I mean, saw one German paper named the attack the bomb and rocket between Haaland and Marlon. So how do you think that how they'll get on with those new signings?
Yes, exciting young player, and Dortmund do usually get these signings right, these young attacking players. That's what they've developed that reputation for managing to develop, improve these players and implement a really exciting attacking style. Just whether in the short term, whether Malin is going to properly replace Sancho. I think he's in his young 22. Sancho was obviously a young player as well, but Sancho very quickly in the Dortmund shirt developed into world class, one of the best players in the league, providing assists. And it's whether McMahon can step into those boots. If Dortmund are hoping to win the league this season, I think in terms of the goalkeeper, I think that's an important aspect of it as well. That last season you did see the struggle between the posts. Really, those two keepers that they had, Burke and Hitz, neither of them were particularly filled you with confidence. And I think it has been really important for them to get a competent goalkeeper between the sticks. I mean, Kobel did really well at Stuttgart last season. Whether they can replicate that at Dortmund, we'll wait and see, because so many keepers at sort of mid-sized clubs you see performing really well, but when there's obviously more pressure when you're between the posts at a bigger club, maybe not really test your concentration, because you're having to deal with less chances when you're playing for a big side. Although when you're playing behind a Dortmund defence, quite often there is a lot of chances that the goalkeeper has to face. But we'll see how he does that. I would say, similar to the Bayern and Leipzig, the concern, as always, with Dortmund is the defence, particularly at centre-back. And it's whether they can sort those issues out, keep the centre-backs fit. I mean, Hummels and Zagadou have been struggling with injuries. Whether they can maintain a really consistent centre-back pairing, or whether they continue the struggles from previous seasons, that it's the defence that lets them down. It'll be interesting to see, though.
Yeah, I think it's definitely huge question marks over the defence, especially with Hummels and Zagadou looking... Well, Zagadou's definitely not, and Hummels looking doubtful to start the first game against Frankfurt. I think Emre Can's probably going to be playing centre-back for the foreseeable, which I don't actually think is the worst thing in the world. I think he's probably a bit safer at centre-back than he is in central midfield. But, I mean, we've gone through the first three teams and said that they've all pretty much got terrible defences, so... I don't want to play up to a stereotype of the Bundesliga, but it is kind of looking like there's going to be a lot of goals, especially if against the teams at the top, which should make for an exciting spectacle. But Roy, I was going to ask you, I saw Raphael Honigstein was making the point on The Athletic that there was a strange dilemma surrounding Dortmund at the end of last season, where and Terzic had done so well that they didn't want him to leave to go to another Bundesliga club or a direct rival, but he couldn't stay because if he was working as an assistant as they originally planned, he was probably going to be a bit too close to Marco Rosa in terms of sort of getting in his way. So they basically created a role for him as the technical director. Well, he'll be working closer with the likes of Michael Zorc, the sporting director, the head of sport, Sebastian Kehl, and obviously the CEO, Hans-Joachim Watzke. And his will be sort of less getting in the way in the changing room. But do you think that, for example, if Dortmund do have a rocky start and that will begin to affect Rosa, that Terzic, you know, there might be calls for him to come back straight away? Do you think that his presence in and around the club might have a destabilizing effect? Or do you think the fact they've managed to keep hold of him and sort of create a good role for him is actually more of a positive thing?
I could go both ways. The thing is that the guy clearly bleeds yellow and black. Like, clearly, like, is there for the club. He's not there to... He's not staying there to be, I don't know, fly on the back of the wall to... In the back of the wall? What's the back of the wall? Like, he's not going to be there to like watch over Rosa in case anything goes wrong. He'd just be over his shoulder and just hanging about, basically. Put a good Scottish term on it. He's not just hanging about. I think he clearly felt that if he could stay at Dortmund, he'd stay. I think if he wanted to go and test himself somewhere else, he probably would have went. So yeah, I don't think he's definitely going to be. If he wanted to have that chance to go and prove himself somewhere, I think he probably, if he had the opportunity, would have went. I don't think he would hang around. I think it's quite awkward to hang around a club that you've been successful at. You've won them a trophy for the first time in a wee while, and they've appointed. You knew they were appointing someone else, but you know how successful you were being. You know how good a rapport you had with the players. I think. He's clearly a good guy. I think if there was anything wrong with it, if he felt like there was going to be something, if there was going to be any issues, if he felt there was going to be a divide, if he felt like Rosa was going to feel uncomfortable, I don't think he'd still be there. So it could go either way. But the good thing for Dortmund is it does go really sour with Rosa. They know they've got the backup right there. They don't need to worry about it. It can be a really straight swap, but don't know, let's give Rose his time. Let's see how Terzic does in his new role. Maybe he adds something to the squad. Maybe they need someone like that to be there for the players but not be the manager and have that kind of connection with the backroom staff that's a bit more lenient, a bit more kind of like someone they can go and speak to. Maybe that's something they could work out with Terzic. But I don't think it's going to be as conflicting as it might be. It just depends how badly it goes in and maybe how Rosa takes it.
I think the thing with Terzic is that if anyone saw the Amazon Prime documentary about Dortmund, you see his figure come up quite a lot, and he's obviously a familiar face in and around the building. So, and you would think that he'd give Rosa the necessary space. I mean, he's a professional, like you said. He loves Dortmund, so he'd only really want the best for them. I think the good news for Dortmund is that they've brought in a coach who does know how to beat Bayern. I mean, in his four games in the Bundesliga against Bayern so far, he's won two and lost two, and BVB in the last six games, for example, have only won one of the last six, and they tend to be hammering. So let's hope that the Rosa can bring something in when it comes to beating Bayern for Dortmund. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the Bundesliga's fourth Champions League representative of this year, and that is Wolfsburg, who are now managed by Mark van Bommel. I personally thought it was quite a strange appointment. I thought there were definitely better, more experienced managers to go for, even within the league itself. But we've already noticed that his first competitive game got off to a bit of a howler, and he looks like his decisions might have accidentally sent them out of the cup for his inability to counter six. But I mean, a lot of the talk about Wolfsburg seems to be that Van Bommel might be able to get on with Jörg Schmacker a bit better than other coaches have in the past. I mean, Oliver Glasner pretty much left because he was one of the many coaches which fell out with Schmacker, the sporting director. I mean, they've brought in the likes of Bornau, Lucas and Felix and Metcher, and Lucas and Metcher is my tip, who's going to do well in the league this season, the dark horse, and the Belgian talented youngster, Aston Franks. But it does seem a lot of negativity about Wolfsburg at the moment. Van Bommel only had one real coaching role, and that was with PSV. He was only there for a season. I mean, he finished second, and he was sacked shortly into the next season. But Roy, do you reckon all of this sort of negativity around the Wolves is warranted, or do you reckon there's another side to it?
The manager is obviously a really important part of every team, right? That's obvious to anyone who knows football. The manager is the spine of everything that goes on. But I don't think that team is going to all of a sudden be bad overnight. Like, those players are not... Like, look at Lacroix, look at Baku, look at Bornau coming in, Babu. You know, they've got a cracking defence. Why are they just going to suddenly be bad? Maybe they're not set up the right way, but they're not going to be the worst players in the world after this. Still got Arnold in the middle. You've still got, like, it's a great team. I don't think that Wolfsburg are going to suddenly pummel down to like 12th place, where everyone seems to be predicting them just because of Van Bommel. They might not keep Van Bommel. Van Bommel might not work, but also might. They're not really a team that really goes for those massive experienced heads either. Like, yeah, they hire Aaron at one point. Come on, like, they're not going to. I don't know. They seem a bit more.
I think
like most of the managers, I'm not including Stephen Clarke in this, but a bit more progressive with that kind of thing. I think it might be an opportunity for him to come in to make his eventual mark on things. I'm not saying he's going to be great. I'm not saying he's done great things, but that team's not going to turn bad overnight for me. I still think they're going to finish quite high next season just by the team.
Yeah, I can't help but disagree with you though, because I think that if Lacroix and, I mean, since Brekalo is pushing desperately for a move away, I think if they were to lose Lacroix and Brekalo, that would be quite a big miss. And I mean, it was only really last season that they started being much of an attacking team anyway. And I can't say I know enough about Van Bommel to say that they're going to, the exact way they're going to play. But I think if they lose Lacroix, who's one of the best central defenders in the league, and a good player like Brekalo, then I'm not sure they've got the talent in their ranks to really replace those two, especially Lacroix. But we'll see. We'll hope for Wolfsburg's sake that that your defence of them is proved worthy. Right. So as we just mentioned there, Oliver Glasner was kind of forced out of Wolfsburg thanks to his falling out with Jörg Schmatke. And he's landed up at our next team, who finished fifth last season, and that is Eintracht Frankfurt. And so we briefly mentioned earlier that, I mean, the signs aren't exactly great for the Eagles, having gone down 2-0 to Mannheim. I mean, I only caught the highlights of this game, but Colin, you said you watched the whole game. I noticed that Kevin Trapp was very busy. And it was just, it's always quite comical to see Hinteregger get sent off. And I think they were clearly targeting him. So do you think this is like a sign of things to come? I mean, a lot of people are saying that the fit might not be very good with Glasner at Frankfurt. It kind of plays sort of opposing styles of football, or have done historically. Do you think that he'll be able, this is like a sign of things to come with Glasner, or do you think that he'll actually do quite well there?
Yeah, but firstly, talk about the Mannheim game. Yeah, I watched the full game. Like, they gave the defence such a torrid time. Hinteregger, I was actually surprised. Apparently that was his first red card for Frankfurt. He seems like the kind of, I think own goals are definitely a specialty, but it seems like the kind of player that would get sent off all the time. But this was his first one.
He's the Bundesliga's Dennis. He's the Earthman of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, he's. But I don't know. He's the kind of person. You see good things from him, and then you see very bad things from him. He's very much. There's two sides to Hinteregger. He can be very clumsy, which you saw on Sunday, because those Mannheim attackers, Boyamba and Costly, just gave the Frankfurt defence massive headache, and Trapp saved them. If Mannheim had really had slightly better quality in front of goal, then it could have been quite a few goals, I think. But just in general, it's probably just too much change at once, to be honest, with Bobic leaving, other personnel, Hütter moving on, who'd had such a successful time, and players as well, Andre Silva, main source of goals from last season. Whether they can really continue to, because I think we've all got used to Frankfurt being a European contender. We're really forgetting before that they were just a sort of a big Bundesliga club, but often relegation candidates, yo-yo in between top two leagues. And so it really has been under the ear of the latter stages of Kovac, but Hütter in particular, that propelled them to the next level with such a good squad, such goal-scoring talents, to really become part of the conversation in the top six. So whether they can continue that, Glasner does seem a bit of a strange appointment, to be honest, because just doesn't really fit with, if they're going to try to continue the work of Hütter, it's a totally different playing style. The way Glasner played with Wolfsburg really wasn't easy on the eye. It was more built on being solid at the back, whereas Hütter was very much aggressive, attacking football, and you can't really see that be the case with Glasner as much. So it's really how they adapt. Personally, I can see them slipping towards mid-table, but there are, with the uncertainty of so many, I mean, there's so much change in the top six or seven clubs that you never really know who's going to adapt and which clubs are going to struggle. So there is still the opportunity for them to get into Europe, but I can see them being one of the clubs that slips out.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing you saw last season, is that it seems like teams were just taking it in turns. All of the teams from sort of third to about sixth or seventh at one point were just kind of taking it in turns to have good runs of form, and then one of them would drop off and the other one would take their place. I mean, at one point it looked absolutely certain that Frankfurt were going to finish in the Champions League, and then Dortmund were never going to catch them, especially after they beat them with about six games to go, from what I remember. And Dortmund ended up finishing third and Frankfurt in fifth. And then you actually saw the same with Leverkusen, who will come on to. They finished the Hinrunde in second and they finished in sixth. So, yeah, I think, like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see who adapts, especially because there has been like unprecedented change in the Bundesliga this season. But yeah, you mentioned André Silva leaving, and they've replaced him with Rafael Santos Borre from River Plate. Roy, you were singing his praises a couple of weeks ago. They announced the signing of Jens-Petter Hauge from AC Milan the other day, and Jesper Lindstrom from Bromby. They all kind of seem like Football Manager type signings that no one's really heard of them. Well, Hauge is pretty prominent at AC Milan, but he's only been there for a couple of seasons or a season, maybe. I can't say I know much about them, but they are players that we've definitely heard of, but not entirely sure how good they are. Do you reckon that the way that they've replaced André Silva is kind of satisfactory, or do you think that the whole Roy that he's left is going to be too much for them to keep up with?
It will be. I mean, when you've got a player scoring that many goals in a season, you can't just go out and replace him unless you're bringing in another absolute quality striker. The thing is, with Santos Borre, is he going to be that main striker? He scored a decent amount of goals. He's not scored an incredible amount of goals, but he clearly suited the game down in Argentina. For 3 and a 4 year deal, it's not the worst thing in the world, to be honest. So I would, I'd give him the time to come in. If he gets an early goal, he might be on off to a flyer. We'll see. But he's definitely not going to replace Silva as a like for like replacement. But I think they've brought in a couple of decent signings. You know, with you were saying about the Jens-Petter Hauge and Jesper Lindstrom. Again, I don't know much about them, but Lindstrom was apparently quite pivotal for Brøndby last season, and he ended up getting a cap for Denmark as well. So as a 21-year-old, that was kind of decent caliber coming into the Bundesliga. And obviously, you've also got Christopher Lenz coming in, who could do a job at left back. I think they've maybe need a change at the fullback positions at Frankfurt recently as well. So maybe that might freshen things up. I think like Danny De Kort has been there for a long while. I don't think the fans are really taking time as much anymore. And he obviously had that spell out at Mainz on loan. So I think maybe a freshen up of the fullbacks could be interesting. And Lenz has had a fairly successful time of it with Union Berlin as well. So I don't think the signings are bad. I think it's just, like Colin said, getting everything together, getting under the new manager and probably a different style. But actually, I think I've tipped them to finish a lot higher than Colin has. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm not sure how you know where Colin's tipped them to finish, because they're all in my secret inbox. So you're not meant to know.
Like they're going to be lowered down towards mid table.
I thought my WhatsApp had been leaked. So that would be problematic. Let me tell you that. not just because of our predictions getting out. Anyway, we'll move on to Bayer Leverkusen. We just mentioned there. They today actually dropped their blue alternate kits, which are actually really nice. But so we were talking about new managers. Roy, I'm just going to come back to you on this one. Sione, the Swiss manager from Young Boys, is he going to be the one who can instill some consistency in Bayer Leverkusen? Because it's an issue they've been plagued with. It's an issue as old as time with Leverkusen, that they just seem to have a mentality where, I mean, last year at Christmas, before the last game of the Hinrunde, you would have said almost nailed on for Champions League, that they finished in sixth, had disastrous form. I mean, they've lost some fairly key players. Leon Bailey going was probably the biggest one. Damari Gray, not sure he was the biggest loss, but still another key player in that position. The Bender twins retiring, you don't know how that big of a loss that's going to be in terms of just morale in the changing rooms. They sort of brought in Mitchell Backer from PSG. I thought when I saw him in the Champions League, he was really poor. But they managed to keep Alario, which I suppose is quite good. So they've got Poyampalo coming back. I mean, the only memorable thing I remember him doing last year was scoring that hat trick, which came out of nowhere for Union. But I mean, go back to Sione. Is he going to be able to, like I say, bring that consistency, or is it going to be another sort of topsy-turvy season for the Werkself?
It all depends on how he can handle the main players at the club, I think. I think if he can bring the best out of Florian Wirtz this season, I think this is Wirtz's season to go and shine. I think Kai Havertz had that season. Kai Havertz took that season on his stride, and he was the best player for Bayer Leverkusen when he got that chance to be the main player. I think if you give Wirtz that chance, I think he's probably going to take it. Especially with Bailey going, it's another key player going that just pushes Wirtz up the food chain as well. He's now becoming one of the best players. I think if you focus most of the things around him, I think he can at least provide some kind of nice attacking football at the club, and probably going to score a lot more goals through his assists. So I think if Sione can do that, if he can bring in that mentality of getting a team that works well together, getting a team, like you said, it's consistency for Bayer. I think there was one point of last season that they were sitting at the top and you were thinking, God, they could go on and they could actually challenge eventually if they kept it going. But as it normally happens, they fell away. I don't know. I think it's going to be a mixed season for Leverkusen. I've tipped them to finish a wee bit lower, perhaps. I don't know. It's another new manager thing. You don't know how this season's going to go at all with these new managers coming in. Sorry, I just dropped something. So with all these new managers coming in, it's going to be quite difficult. I think for Leverkusen, it's just, like I said, they're not a one-man team at all. They're definitely getting much better players. Like, not much better players, but they'll definitely get good players there in that squad to build around. But I just think the Wirtz is going to be far key. So key for them this season.
Yeah, I think one player I didn't really mention there was Patrick Schick. And I think we were all sort of watching.
Go and talk about him on this podcast. Because he scores 40-yard goals against Scotland.
Ah, yes. I forgot about that goal.
Did you? Aye.
Who was that against again?
you're hooked for the next one.
Yeah, no, but about Schick, I mean, I thought we were all watching the Euros when he was all bagging in those goals, some from halfway, some not. Sort of thinking, hey, like, where's this come from? It's not really something we'd seen in the Bundesliga. I mean, we'd seen the spectacular goals, but we hadn't really seen the regular goal scoring form. So if he can sort of bring his form from the Euros into the Bundesliga, then Leverkusen could be quite a problem, actually. But we'll move on quickly to a surprising seventh place finish for Union Berlin last season, who will now play against either Kupios of Finland or Astana of Kazakhstan. And if you've seen the Union in English or Union in Europe Twitter account, as it's now known, you'll realize how difficult it is to figure out who it is they were going to play. I think it was Kyle who made the spreadsheet for that. It hurt my head to look at it for too long, but I mean, they're going to get a trip very far away no matter what. So the party train to one of those will be pretty fun. But the main question, Colin, you've got 30 seconds to answer this. Is playing in Europe going to be a help or hindrance to Union Berlin?
Depends what you look at. If you look at in terms of the club and the fans, it's a help. Help financially, great for the fans getting back in the stadiums. Have I actually got 30 seconds to answer this? Just asking.
Have all the time in the world, mate. Take it away.
Right. Oh, I can't answer anything in 30 seconds. Even the way he started it, it was like, you said answer 30 seconds and Colin goes, well, it just depends which way you look at it. He's going to come up with like four different fucking points of view.
Well, do you know what it is? It's because me and Colin are both history graduates. You know, you can never see something from just one point of view. You've got to weigh it all up. So,
yeah.
Yeah, what were you saying, Colin?
Yeah, it depends what way you look at it. I mean, it'll be a help financially to the club. It's great for the supporters, even though there may not be, although fans getting back in the stadiums, there may not be too much potential for international travel for the group stages. And the home games have to play at the Olympia Stadion. But it'll be a great experience regardless. I mean, play that club in Europe a few years ago would have been totally unimaginable. In terms of, for football and perspective in the league, it could be a hindrance, but looking at the transfers, they have really beefed up the squad quite a bit. Although, looking at it, it looks like they've gone for quantity over quality, in my opinion. Some of the players have gone for sort of Zweiteliga experience, sort of low down Bundesliga. So they've got like Rick van Drongelen come from Hamburg, got the likes of Kevin Behrens from Sandhausen. Just really, I see them as squad players that ready to step up in terms of rotation that will be useful, but I'm not sure it will add much in terms of quality to the squad, particularly if they're wanting to replicate their seventh place finish. Likes of Haraguchi, Vogelsammer, I mean, players that have played in the Bundesliga and are capable of decent performances, but I'm not really sure it's going to be. I don't really know if it improves the team much, but in terms of the squad rotation, it should help with that. So really, this really hasn't taken 30 seconds, but I would say I can't see them with the fixtures, the extra fixtures. I can't see them replicating last season's finish, but I think some of the worries will be negated by the amount of signings that they made, as the squad is a lot bigger and they've got the much potential for rotation.
Yeah, longest 30 seconds of my life that. But no, I think you're definitely right. I mean, I'm not sure that too many Union fans would be targeting another seventh place finish. They were kind of in dreamland at that point, but they'll definitely hope to use it to sort of kick on and establish themselves as a regular Bundesliga side, as opposed to more of a yo-yo club. I mean, not to talk about Köln's twice in one sentence, but that the Köln, the ultimate yo-yo club, you saw how the effect that playing in the Europa League had for them, and they basically sent them down. So I think Urs Fischer will be hoping for much of the same, that they'll be really targeting mid-table, and that the European outings won't be too damaging. So the last team we're going to talk about in this little section here before we move on to the bottom of the table is Borussia Mönchengladbach, the Foles, who have brought in Adi Hütter as part of their managerial carousel. Quite an interesting transfer window for them. Didn't really lose anyone too important. I mean, Lazaro went back on loan, his loan finished, but apart from scoring that goal, I didn't really think he was too impressive. But the most important, most kind of interesting thing for me is bringing in Luka Netz from Hertha. I mean, I know a lot of Hertha fans were quite upset about that, especially because he had kind of verbally made an agreement with the club. I mean, he's just 18, but at the age of 17, he'd already made 11 appearances in the Bundesliga. He scored as well, might have even been on his debut. He also came third in the Fritz Walter Award last year, which obviously Florian Wirtz won, and behind Torben Lein, who's at Bayern. But just going back to Hütter, I mean, I'm not sure there's too much more you can talk about in terms of the personnel. I mean, Laszlo Benes come in, he was all right against Kaiserslautern. But, I mean, yeah, in terms of Hütter, Roy, I've always personally felt that in the last couple of seasons, Frankfurt and Gladbach have kind of been on similar trajectories. I've always seen them as kind of similar in the way they play. So do you think in a way that, I mean, you might disagree with me, but do you think in a way Hütter coming into Gladbach is actually quite a good fit, and he might be able to sort of restore some of the form that you saw of them last year, get players like Player and Bolo, players like that, playing well on a more regular basis?
Yeah, I think it'd be probably not better fit than Rosa, because Rosa did well and Rosa managed them well in games, but I think he might actually get more out of these particular players. And it's just, I know I made this comment earlier about getting manager coming in and getting the best out of these players, but I think Hütter could get the best out of a Neuhaus. I think he could probably progress Neuhaus further. I'm still not, I think Player had a really good season, and then last season he just, you know, I mean, most of the Gladbach players had an off season, but I don't think Player's going to be. This could come back to bite me in the arse here, but I just don't think Player's going to be that, like, number nine striker for them. Turan could be an interesting one, and Mbolo. I don't know, maybe Mbolo might start more than Player. It depends how he's going to set things up, but I think just the midfield is going to help them if they can keep a hold of Denis Zakaria. That would be really helpful, but it looks like he's probably going to be off. Atalanta is probably his destination. Not that I have any sources, just from what I've been reading. But I think it does help that he's got a good quarter squad there. I think his defence is very, very decent. So for me, Hütter probably suits them well. He's got a class goalkeeper who we saw. I think anyone who didn't already think that Jan Sommer was this. It's annoying because you want to see he's the best goalkeeper in the Bundesliga, but he's not. Neuer is. He's the best goalkeeper outside of Bayern Munich, obviously. And anyone who didn't know that already, George hasn't agreed with me on that, but I think he is. Saw that in the Euros. He was immense for Switzerland when they did play well and how far they got and beating France as well. So he's got a good squad there, and I think that's probably going to be what I did. Wait, it's Adi Hütter, isn't it? Yeah, I'm getting confused. And it's probably going to be, that's going to play to Adi Hütter's advantage already coming in to just basically, he'll have less of a transformation period, I think.
Yeah, I think the main thing I always think about Gladbach, and I was just kind of reminded of this when I was watching their game against Kaiserslautern the other day, is that, I mean, you've mentioned they do have a lot of good players, but honestly, apart from probably Kramaric at Hoffenheim, I can't think of a team that relies on one player more than Gladbach rely on Lars Stindl. I think he's by far their most consistent player. I mean, I think I mentioned last season that he got 14 goals last season, and I think about 11 of them were penalties or something. And the next top scorer after that was Turan with just 8, and then you've got Hoffman with 6. But just from not just in terms of goals, but in terms of performances as well, Stindl is always going to give you a solid performance. Whereas I just see so many of those players. I mean, the likes of, Neuhaus, Mbolo, Turan, Player, just not performing as on a more consistent basis. And I think that's what often costs them. So that would be what Adi Hütter is looking to do, trying to get them to get the best out of them on a more regular basis. I'm just going to have to start right from the start again, because the first bit was shit as well. Sorry, I'm wasting my time here. Okay, so that was good to round up last year's top eight, and we it didn't take us too long to get through as well, so that's good. We're now going to move from the top to the bottom, which means we're starting with the team which came second in the Spanish Bundesliga last year, and that is our friends from Bavaria, Greuther Fürth, who are coming into the Bundesliga for only their second ever season, having been relegated immediately in their first season. I think the main thing when you look at Fürth, or at least when I look at Fürth, is they lost Anton Stach to Mainz, but they have brought in Adrian Fein, who is not my most popular player in the Bundesliga because he is another one of those who played his earlier youth for 1860 before moving to Bayern. And then he had spells at HSV and PSV as well. I mean, they've also got the youngest squad in the league. I mean, I'm not sure, Colin, what you think of the players they've brought in and the players they've actually lost as to how they'll sort of target this campaign, whether it'll be just that they'll go all out and hope that they can achieve something similar to what Bielefeld did last season, or if they've kind of just hoping for the best and they're not going to try and exert themselves too much.
Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be much expectation from Fürth. Of the two sides coming up, Bochum and Fürth, both, you'd say, are clubs that don't have too high expectations quite often when clubs come up. I mean, last season it was Bielefeld and Stuttgart. Quite often when a small club comes up, there's a bigger club that you would think would kick on and push towards mid-table in their first season back in the Bundesliga. But this time, I think Fürth have sort of benefited from the fact that it's Bochum that they've got coming up, and Bielefeld managing to stay up last season as well. So despite them really having, I mean, I would say they do have the weakest squad in the league and they do have the lowest budget, but there are other teams in a sort of similar situation to them, which could be to their benefit. They did play really attractive football last season under Stefan Leitl, and you hope to continue that. Really play with freedom, because they really don't have that weight of expectation on them. The players they lost, though, will be a big loss to them, Anton Stach and David Raum. Particularly Raum, you saw how good he was during the Under-21 Championship, going to Hoffenheim, which I thought was quite unfortunate. Paul Jäkel as well, another player that they've lost. And I don't really see the signings that they've made really sufficiently improving the squad for the top flight. Likes of Fine, there's a talented young player, but I just don't see the likes of him. So Zoyfert, you saw him at Bielefeld last season, didn't consistently play. Max Christiansen from Waldhof Mannheim as well, from the Dritte Liga. I just don't... It's good that they're not coming up and just instantly spending loads of money, but I'm slightly pessimistic about their chances, but they could surprise you as they did last season, even getting promoted in the first place.
Yeah, and Roy, do you think it's much of the same for Bochum? I mean, I'm not sure how much of a loss you think Robert Zuhl is. He's also, I mean, we're going to probably come on to talk about Quaison, who's gone to play in, is it also the UAE? But yeah, and they've replaced him with the likes of Rex Bakay, who I know you were quite keen on and quite upset that Köln didn't manage to secure his services for this year. I mean, they've still got Zoller there as well, Bloom still there. The most memorable thing for me from last year was that red card against Haas Foul, which pretty much ruined that game, and you thought that might have cost Bochum the promotion in the end. But do you think, like, with the likes of Zoller still at Bochum, that they'll be able to mount a case to stay in the league? I mean, I just think you look at, like, elsewhere, you look at the likes of Bielefeld, Köln. I would actually probably put Augsburg in there, Hoffenheim maybe. Do you think that there's enough teams in and around that level that they'll be able to compete, or do you think that it might be tough going for Bochum this year?
I kind of make similarities to them in Bielefeld. I think the way Bielefeld came up last season and you thought, okay, there's a team there, they're not going to be world beaters, but they can do something. I think there's similarities there. I think, like you said, with the players, like, I think Zoller could be an interesting one, because when he was in the Bundesliga with Köln, he never really played, and he's going to be the star man this season, like, along with Bloom, along, you know, with Zuhl's gone. It'll be an interesting one to see how he actually goes with the team in that way. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I think that's the best thing to describe them. I think they'll be similar to how Bielefeld really did it by the end of the season. Edward Leuven coming in as well from Hertha Berlin and loan. Don't think there's going to... He's not going to set the world out. I think he did an okay loan spell at Augsburg last season. But I do think that Rex Bajai will be an interesting signing for them. I thought he would have went a little bit higher in the league form. So take him as you can. But Bochum could be an interesting one this season. I wouldn't completely write them off. I would say, like, to compare them, like, when Paderborn came up, that's what Fürth are unfortunately going to be like. They just don't have the resources. They don't have the money. There is such a big gap between the teams at the top of the Zweite Liga and the teams at the mid-table in Bundesliga, skewed gap. And it's not like when you compare, like, the English Premier League to the Championship, the way you could probably say a lot of the bottom teams could probably fit into the top, and the top teams, it's not the same. I think a lot of teams can't, like, physically and financially support themselves in the Bundesliga. So I think Bochum are not going to be that team. Bochum are going to be the Bielefelds of recent times. I think they'll come up and they'll do okay, maybe avoiding the relegation.
Yeah, that's just got me thinking. I mean, either one of you can take this. Do you think that in a way that Bielefeld have sort of laid the blueprint for how you can sort of stay up in a very attritional way. I mean, last year, scoring 26 goals in 34 games, pretty much only ever winning their games 1-0. Do you think that's, in a way, a bit dangerous for the likes of Bochum and Fürth, that they can target either playing like Bielefeld and just thinking, right, don't concede, we'll try, have someone like close up front of that, like how Bielefeld had, and we'll just try and nick a goal? Or do you think that it's probably better for them to play a bit more expansive, not so conservative, and leave themselves a bit more open to conceding?
Yeah, no, I think it's not me. I mean, maybe Lucarum is a blueprint, but they obviously were successful for coming back into the league for such a long time. I think if you look at other teams like Mainz and Augsburg, how they've developed themselves, like even when they first came into, they weren't being in the positions that they ended up in. Some of the, you know, you saw Mainz and Augsburg both in European competition as well. And you know, Berlin's another one to look at. Like, can they have that okay season, not fantastic season, and then the next season they just got up, went up to the European positions as well? I think they have to come into it and just be a bit more confident. I think Bochum could be a bit more confident than Fürth, considering the way their squad is with some of the players they have. I think Ryman and goals is it Ryman or Riemann?
Riemann.
Yeah, Riemann, thank you. Sorry, I should know that. I think Riemann and goals will be definitely an interesting one for them as well. I think they've got a decent goalkeeper and already just needs to test himself in the Bundesliga. I don't know. It's a difficult question, Colin. You got any thoughts on that? It's a good one, actually. Well done, John.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when these, as Roy was saying earlier, which I agree with, how there is such a big gap between the two leagues. These sides really have to be pragmatic when they come up in terms of their playing style. You saw teams like Paderborn come up and they tried to play good football, but they didn't really have the squad to do it. They were left exposed at the back, quite often naively exposed, I thought. Yeah, so Bielefeld, really, I think with the resources that they had, they really had to implement that playing style to gain that success, and that helped them stay up. And as a model to follow for other teams, yeah, you have to really accommodate to the league with the resources that you have. And a side like Bochum and Fürth, they're not going to play even the mid-table sides off the park. They don't have the players to do that. They don't have the resources. So it really is a case of often nicking a goal, trying to play defensively. And Bielefeld were really successful with that. Had the amount of times, so many of their victories, it was by a goal to nil. And they had so many clean sheets. So I would agree with that. It's a good blueprint for these similar sides that don't have the budget, don't really have those talented, creative players that other teams can afford in the league.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that you mentioned Paderborn, because it is kind of like two ends of the spectrum with how you can approach coming into the Bundesliga for the first season, whether you want to go for the Bielefeld approach at one end, where, like I said, you just go for the attritional, pragmatic football, or you just kind of go all guns blazing like Paderborn did, and that ultimately cost them. But I guess that says as much about Steffen Baumgart as it does about anything, which kind of leads me nicely on to our next team. Roy, ask the FC Köln, how are they going to get on under Baumgart? Do you think that the style of play is going to change drastically? I mean, he certainly bought Köln a lot more goodwill in the league, I think, than they've probably had in recent times, just because Baumgart is such a likable character. But I'm not sure if that will necessarily, I'm not sure what you think, but I'm not sure if that will translate into results. Is it sort of, I don't want to say sort of like kamikaze, but is that sort of all guns blazing approach a bit worrying for you? And do you think it will be translated into the way Köln play, especially when there are certainly issues or question marks for sure over the Köln defence?
Well, firstly, I'd love to bring up the fact that I was so cocky and saying how the shock of the round was going to be Köln beating Karlsruhe Siena, and then they bloody struggled along the line. So that was great. Nice for me to say that. So I'm glad none of you brought it up. I thought I'd bring it up myself before you used it. I'm going to be so negative here. I think Kiln are going to get relegated. I generally don't think the whole Baumgart vibe is going to save them. Great manager, great technique, great vibe, great views of the game. But look, the team they've got is not good enough to stay in this league. They don't have any... I don't think they've got a good enough team to stay in this league at all. I don't think they've got... It looks like he's going to play Modest up front, and that kind of worries me as a sympathiser of this club. And like, if you're leaving Anderson on the bench, even if it's a Pokal game, I don't really care. You need to figure out what your best 11 is, and I don't think he's going to find that. I just think they don't have the best players. They've got rid of Ismo Jakobs as well, went to Monaco, which was an interesting departure, shall we say. They've not brought anyone in. They've brought in Hubers from Hanover, who, fair enough, was well thought of in his Vita Liga, but that was Vita Liga, the low end of his Vita Liga last season with Hanover at 96. And I don't know, Schalb came back, and Schalb's a player I've always kind of rated, but is he going to fit into the Baumgart style? I don't know. I've got no hope for FC Köln this season, and I think sometimes you always predict your team that you like to do really well because you have to. I generally don't have any hope here for FC Köln. I think they're going to get relegated.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, surely between the likes of Modest, Anderson, Oot, that someone between them can score some goals. You've really got no confidence at all.
No, I think Uth had a good chance. Like, Marco had a great opportunity when he was here on loan. When he was there on loan. But he still, he had to do everything on his own, and he doesn't really suit being that player. So it only lasted for 6 games. And he had that really good run of 6 games. Was he created 9 goals or something. I can't remember. It was something crazy though from the season before. But he doesn't suit that role, and there's no one really to take that role, I think. I don't know what Dejan Lubicic is going to be like. Don't watch much of the Austrian Bundesliga to have a proper comment on that. There's just no one there that's going to... There's no standout star player for me. There's no one there. They've got rid of everyone recently. They've not brought anyone else in. And for me, there's just nothing there to be excited about apart from the manager. But like I said earlier in this episode, the manager doesn't completely make the season or break the season. He'll bring good ideas. He'll try and make them play good football, but you can't make footballers that aren't good enough for this level good enough for this level just by playing better football. I just don't think they're going to have enough in the end, and Baumgart's going to unfortunately suffer for it, I think.
I don't know. I'm not quite as sceptical as you are, but I was just going to say about Ismail Jakobs leaving. It's certainly disappointing for a youngster to leave. I can't possibly imagine why anyone would trade the lifestyle of Cologne for Monaco. But could you? No. Anyway.
Can you imagine looking at that dome every day and having to go to the Riviera or whatever? I mean, that is disgusting. Imagine having to do that.
Yeah, we'll give it a rest on the comments on the beauty of Cologne. To another one of Germany's finest cities, if it exists at all, and that's Arminia Bielefeld. I mean, we've spoken plenty so far about the way they got through last season. I think the takeaway or the main headline is obviously that Ritsu Doan is going to be a huge loss this season. I mean, they've managed to make Okugawa's loan permanent. They've brought in Yanni Serra. And of course, they've brought in Alessandro Schupp. So for that reason, Colin, there's only one person I can ask. Are players the likes of Schupp? I mean, in all seriousness, are they kind of the ones that can replace? I mean, you saw how important Doan was to them last year. They obviously owed a lot to the keeper, Stefan Ortega. But do you think that they've got enough to potentially kick on a bit more in the way they play? Or do you think that it's just going to be tried and tested method, just go for much the same this season?
Well, I think the plan for appointing Cramer was that they'd be a bit more progressive with their signings, get more younger players in the squad, try to play a bit more of an attacking style of football. Say football.
What did football say?
With the players they've got, I mean, I'm not sure it's going to be enough. I mean, the players that they've brought in, if it's going to be enough to replicate the creativity that Doan offered them, he really was a quality player, and I thought it was quite a shame that he's not remained in the Bundesliga, even if it wasn't for Armenia. If a mid-table club could have came in for him, I thought that would have been really good. But they have made some interesting signings. Schupp, he's come from...
How much did he run last season, Colin?
Schupp is a hard-working player, but he runs a lot, clearly. But he's come from a Schalke team, and I don't necessarily think that signing players from relegated sides, it's a bit like Kuhlen signing Oat. I don't know if that's necessarily the right formula you want in terms of staying up as signing players that are already going to be in a negative mentality. I'm more interested in the likes of good Zweite Liga players like Robin Hack, Pruger, Serra, Vasiliadis, how they're going to cope with the Bundesliga. I mean, Vasiliadis, we've seen before, Paderborn in the league. Hack had some time at Hoffenheim, although didn't really play in the Bundesliga. How well they adapt and if they manage to improve the squad sufficiently. In my predictions, I'll not give anything away, but I was struggling to separate Bochum and Bielefeld, which side would finish above the other. I think they're both quite even in terms of their squads and their ability. I think a good question is the tactics for Bielefeld, whether they do continue with that attritional style or they try to go a bit expansive. And if they do, how's the side going to adapt to that? Will players like Klose still fit into the system? It's always that second season that is the toughest.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. Like with so many of the teams at the bottom, if it's going to be sort of like a who moves first, if one team's going to start really going for it, if the other teams are going to have to pick up a bit more. I think it's probably between Bielefeld, Köln, Bochum and Fürth, but there's always going to be a team that will one of the teams will probably come onto that might surprise us and play it well below par and join them in trying to stay up. So on that note, we'll move on to the team who finished above Bielefeld just about last year, which is Hertha Berlin, who really have no place in this conversation given their financial resources, some of their players they've got in their squad. I mean, the main thing about Hertha is they do now have Freddy Bobic as sporting director, which you'd hope would bring a bit more stability or a bit more in the way of sensible moves, because the main issue for me with Hertha is they just keep having problems off the field. I'm not sure Bobic can do everything to resolve that, but it seemed like at one point last season, the season before, that every other week there was just some issue with what they were doing off the pitch was just distracting them on the pitch. So it'd be good to see if Bobic will instill a sort of different mentality. I mean, it's kind of reflected in their transfers, I suppose. I think Kevin Prince-Boateng, he's going to be fun in the Bundesliga. The likes of Serdar from Schalke, Jovetic, he's made the trip over from Monaco. And Richter is actually a player that I'm very excited to see at Hertha. He's probably the only player I actually liked at Augsburg. They've sent Arne Meyer the other way, which I think is quite a shame because he's a player that's still got a lot of potential, which he kind of showed towards the end of last season at Bielefeld. Obviously, they've lost Nets to Gladbach, was already spoken about. But do you think, I mean, we kind of mentioned it last week, Roy, do you think the Hertha are going to be able to put all of their issues they've had to one side? And finally, I mean, they've got to be targeting top half of the table this season and probably go for Europe next year. I mean, they can't keep going on about their attention as a big city club and be finishing between Bielefeld and Augsburg as they did last year.
100%. I think they're just going to be one of those teams that if they don't kick on soon, they're going to get stuck in this rut. Bobby's coming in is going to be great to try and assure things, you know, getting that Frankfurt mould into Hertha this season and for the next few seasons might actually be the kind of key that they needed. I think there's a lot of deadwood at Hertha in the past couple of seasons. They've been signing and they've just been spending a lot of money, and there's been a lot of deadwood kind of players. And I think maybe looking at like players that probably didn't want to be there, like I'm not saying these players don't, but just from their mentality, like on the pitch, I felt like Cordoba didn't really fancy it after they realised that it wasn't a step up from FC Köln last season. I think Guendouzi, I said so many things about Guendouzi, I really don't rate Guendouzi as a good football player. See what he does in the Premier League again, but he didn't do much for me, and I didn't like his attitude in the Bundesliga either. You know, like Khedira coming in as this big signing, and like he played what, 5 games and just didn't do anything to help them. You know, I think that's just going to be Hertha's. It's going to benefit Hertha this season. It's just getting rid of some of those players that probably don't. They probably still have some of them still left there, but like getting some of them out and bringing in. I think Jovetic could be an interesting one. Jovetic has had a good pedigree of scoring goals. It doesn't really matter his age. Doesn't really matter where he's been. I think he's generally had a decent career so far. Like, why can't he do that for Hertha? The only issue is they'll be bringing in a lot of strikers like Piontek, who don't really seem to be hitting the ground running, but maybe Jovetic is coming with a bit less of a kind of pressure on him for being this, like when Piontek came from AC Milan, he was scoring goals for fun in Serie A. So I don't know. I think just if they can get that team playing the way they should be playing, they should have no issues finishing the top half of the table. But I do agree, Arne Meyer is a strange loss, very strange loss.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, Richter, I've always thought at Augsburg has got potential. So I'm not sure. I'd say it's quite an even swap. I don't know, but that actually brings us on to Augsburg. I mean, I perhaps have a disproportionate like for Augsburg. I think a lot of it comes from when they had those La Decima t-shirts when they stayed up for 10 seasons in the Bundesliga. And well, they are a pretty terrible team to watch. Generally, they got a bit better last season at times. But I think this season could be their year. That they've had 12 seasons in the Bundesliga. I think it's their time. They're not getting a... They're not getting that 12. They're not getting the 13th. You don't reckon? What?
I think I'm kind of feeling quite confident about them. I don't know why.
Augsburg. Roy, the question is, are Augsburg the Sandhausen of the Bundesliga?
Probably the Sandhausen. Yeah, they might be. They could potentially could be. I don't know. I don't get all this Augsburg hate at the moment. I think one nearly left the meeting. Oops. Never done that before. So I don't get the whole Augsburg thing. I think there's like they've got the two German under 21 winning team in midfield going to be starting for them in Dorsch and Meyer. I mean,
yeah, Dorsch is going to be good. That's probably going to bring a great bit of freshness to their side, I'd say.
Exactly. Like, they looked excellent in the summer. There's definitely like something there. Those two alone are very good signings. They were pissed last year, let's be honest. They were absolutely honking to watch. But like think of give them a bit like sorry for the choice of words there, but they were like bringing those two in. That's just for me, that's a huge, huge advantage for them. I have tipped them to not be in the relegation fight. And they started last season really well. Let's remember that. They started really well and that helped them. Maybe they'll do it again this year.
Yeah. And I like it. The more I think about it, they are just one of those teams that just plays pretty terribly most of the time, but then they'll win enough games. I mean, I think we've kind of gone over it enough, but there's enough terrible teams in the Bundesliga this year that they'll probably escape, make it onto their 13th year. They can put that on their t-shirt. Yeah, so Augsburg, we'll see how they'll get on. I mean, they've clearly split opinions here on the pod, so that will be interesting to see. Our final team that we're going to talk about, and like I said, we have left some out, I think, off the top of my head, they're Freiburg, Hoffenheim, Stuttgart. Maybe we can talk about them a bit after this if we've got time. But the last team we're going to talk about in terms of teams that may be flirting with relegation this year and did finish 16th last year is, I mean, we've all said that we're sceptical of the hype train surrounding Mainz. I mean, they obviously finished the season unbelievably well. I mean, what was it, like 32 points in the Rückrunde, having collected just 7 in the Hinrunde. You know, Bo Svensson arguably was the manager of the season last year. But is there worries for you, Colin, about Bo Svensson's first full season with Mainz? I mean, like I mentioned earlier, Robert Quaison's gone. They've got Kaur in again, who was all right on from Frankfurt. Brought in Lee from Kiel. And you know, they're still up front, despite the loss of Quaison. They've still got, you know, Onisiwo and Burkhardt. I mean, we will quickly mention the fact that Onisiwo does have COVID right now, as well as 2 players and a member of the coaching staff, and 8 players and 2 staff members are currently in quarantine. So their training's been cancelled. So in the short term, their first match of the season could potentially be in doubt. But just in the longer term, Colin, do you think that, like I said, the first full season for Bo Svensson could be a bit worrying, and all the sort of positivity surrounding them in the Rückrunde last year could disappear quite quickly if they don't pick up in the same way they finished last season?
You saw from the second half of last season, Svensson, he clearly has a good coach that got, I mean, it's not like he just kept Mainz up and by the skin of his teeth. They were performing like a European side, really, in terms of their form in the second half of last season. So he's clearly got that coaching ability. It's just, in terms of the squad, I don't really see it as the strongest. So a lot of people, based on the second half of last season, might think that they'll be pushing towards the top half, potentially. I don't really see that, because I think no matter how good a coach he is, I don't see the squad as good enough to sustain that over the season. The attack is, in my opinion, too weak. They've lost Quaison, who didn't have the best of seasons last year, but he was one of the better attacking players. They're still playing the like, and Burkhardt, he's still a young player. He could develop, he could improve this season and maybe become a greater source of goals. But they're still get the squad players like Onisiwo and Shalai, who I don't think are top quality strikers that are going to take the club to the next level, really. Have made interesting signings. Lee, it'll be interesting to see how he steps up. Anton Stach as well, which are interesting young signings. Lee's not young, he's 29, but Stach's
he's not finished, he's only 28.
Stach's an interesting young signing, another one of the crop of the under 21 players that have moved on to clubs, and be interested to see how they cope in their new sides. So to answer the question, I don't think Mainz will go down, because Mainz and Augsburg never go down and they'll never get relegated, because that just seems to be what they do. There's always worse sides in the league. They always put a run of form together, but I don't see them really doing anything spectacular, because the squad in terms of personnel does look quite weak, in my opinion.
So, like, I 100% agree with that. I don't understand this whole, like, Mainz are going to finish in the top half of the table shite, to be honest. Like, let's just be, like, clear. Like, there's no chance Mainz have got the capabilities. Okay, we said that, we would have said that about Union last year, but Union at least had something about them. Mainz have got nothing going forward for me. Okay, they're going to play nice football, but, like, we've had this kind of whole theme that I keep bringing up, is the manager's not going to make the team. Bo Svensson had a great end to that season, but give him a bit more time before you pull that pressure on him that he's going to finish top half. I generally don't see that ever happening for Mainz at all again. Like, they had that good season where they qualified for Europe. It's not going to happen again in this Bundesliga. This Bundesliga is a lot better than it was 10 years ago when that happened. So I don't know, maybe there's a bit of a rant there. I apologise, but I just don't get the whole Mainz are going to do amazingly well. Mainz are going to finish in an okay position for Mainz. They're not going to be a relegation problem. They're not going to be top half. They'll be an okay finish, but they just don't have the strikers, like Colin said.
Yeah, that's good to know that I've passed on the torch this week for the sort of uncalled for rant. I mean, like I said, 2 weeks ago against Sargent, last week against Arp, and now the whole of Mainz and Bo Svensson has got it from Roy, so I can't wait to see.
It's mostly the other people who are tipping them than Mainz. I'm not saying anything about Mainz, I'm just saying the people who are like tipping them to be the top 10 team, like there's no chance.
Anyone in particular? No, I think on that note, I mean, we were going to maybe leave some time to talk about the other teams we've not mentioned, but I think we'll leave that for this week. I feel like we've been talking for quite a while. There was a lot to get through, obviously, with the Pokal at the weekend and the Bundesliga starting this season. So, like I said at the start of the episode, we'll put a tweet out either tomorrow, well, Thursday when this episode comes out, and just reply any questions you might have that we'll get around to answering at the start of next week's episode, because obviously we had a lot to get through. Also, our predictions are going to be coming out either tomorrow or Thursday or Friday. They'll definitely be out by the start of the Gladbach-Bayern game on Friday night. There was obviously no quiz this week because we just had a lot to get through. So Colin had a quiz to get through, but he's far too tired. I can see the bags developing under his eyes. So we're gonna let Colin go to sleep. He's got a big day tomorrow. And yeah, we'll thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.